Well, my idea of a school, Rosie said, is that it should be out of doors. Oh, but Rosie, Laura interrupted, we couldn't study out of doors when it was raining or snowing. I've thought of that, declared Rosie, and you're right, you couldn't. But a lot of studies could be carried on just as well under the trees as anywhere else. Reading and singing and almost anything that you don't have to write. Of course, I will admit that papers blow and rattle when there's a wind, but we could weigh them down with stones. We could hang maps and blackboards on the trees, and we could build lockers for books against the tree trunks. That's when the weather's good. But when it rains, classes could be held in great glassed-in balconies like sleeping porches, only bigger, so that you'd feel you were out of doors, even if you weren't. I'd like schools to be built in the midst of a great park and some of the classes to be held in a garden and some in an orchard. Rosie's ideas were greeted with applause from the rest of the Big Eight. All right, Billy said, twinkling. Very interesting, I'm sure. Now you, Laura? Well, the thing I should most enjoy in a school, declared Laura, would be to be allowed to get up and walk around and talk whenever I wanted to. I don't see why everything has to be done sitting down. And I don't see, when you do sit down, why you shouldn't have a comfortable chair and a comfortable desk. I should want a nice big flat-top desk for every child and one of those chairs you can whirl around in. Oh, and I think every child ought to have a typewriter.
The author of those thoughts about how things are supposed to be was Inez Haynes Irwin. But it could be you. The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. To conduct today's program, here's children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
Last year, we had a program on utopias. Utopias are ideal places. And some students chose to write about ideal schools. The papers that came in on ideal schools were so interesting that I thought we ought to do a whole program on ideal schools. After all, you spend 6 or 7 hours a day, 5 days a week at school. You ought to have plenty of ideas on what you'd do if you could make a school exactly as you'd like it. One teacher didn't send in the school papers, but she wrote that most of them degenerated to an all-day recess. If you want school to be an all-day recess, okay, write it out. But don't stop there. Begin to think, what do I learn at recess? What is it that makes recess a happier time than the rest of school? I can give some guesses, and they're like Rosie and Laura. You can use your body freely. You're outside, you're running around. You can use your voice freely. In the town I live in, there are several schools where the children are not allowed to speak while they are eating lunch. Out in recess, you're a vital part of things. You're giving orders as well as taking orders. You're a participant in the games, and you have some part in determining what the play is going to be. And you can use your wits. Play is challenging. It can be very hard work. There's a famous Russian writer of the last century, Tolstoy, who ran a school for several years, and he said, in effect, what's this about children not playing? Why isn't play valuable? Their work is to play. There is more learning that's going on in play than in what we usually label work. You know that's true. You will put tremendous physical effort into building snow forts, making snowballs, which you don't put into cleaning the basement with nearly as much enthusiasm. You are absorbed mentally and physically. You are joyful. How could school be made to be more joyful? The part that I read at the beginning from Maida's Little School tells about some ideal schools of the characters in the story. And that whole book is lots of fun because the children discover that they are going to school in the kind of school that they want without actually knowing that they are going to school. Several adults come to stay at the estate where the eight of them are living. a Frenchman who can't speak any English, and they have to learn to speak French in order to speak with him. Interestingly enough, a children's author comes to stay there and write her book, and they all become interested in writing books, and so instead of diagramming sentences, spelling lessons, and so forth, they begin writing their own books, and Bunny helps them with how to write a book, and they have to get the copy in order and get the spelling proper and things like that so that they learn their composition while they are actually composing. And then a man named Mr. Hood, that they call Robin Hood, joins the other two, and he is a naturalist and is interested in things of nature. And in that way, they are absorbing science without knowing that they are going to school, which they had earlier said that they all hated and did not want to go to. I think we have to broaden our notion about what a school is. When we lived in Rockford, and I was recording these programs with WHA, I brought up a group of children from Welsh School, where my daughter was going to school, and we spent the day in Madison. They listened in on the radio show. They had a tour of WHA. We then went over to the Union and had lunch, and the National Guard was standing around in their uniforms. And they were fascinated with this military show at the University of Wisconsin. And we discussed the meaning of the National Guard, the meaning of student rebellions. We followed that with a trip to the State Museum and finally over to the Science Building, where we saw the Baraboo mastodon standing there in all his red bones. And as we were walking back to the Volksbus to drive back to Rockford, why, one of the boys said, "I'm sure glad that I'm here today. All the other kids had to go to school." I said, "You've been going to school." And he was astounded, because his idea of school was what goes on within the four walls of his classroom. But isn't learning where it's going on anywhere school? Why does it have to be within the four walls of a schoolroom? The idea of Maida's little school isn't a new one. Rousseau had it 200 years ago, and others had it before him. And we are beginning to look at some of these ideas again. I'm teaching at a school for future teachers where we're trying to think about some of these things and do things differently. And one way I prepared myself was writing to friends and saying, "Would you ask your kids what they would like in a school?" Here's a letter from a fifth grader in Michigan, a part of the letter. "Then many teachers have lots of posters and things all over the room. Usually they have bulletin boards with pictures on it for the month and things like that. But this should be done by the kids, which would make it more interesting and they would be able to do something for the class." See, there's that idea of participating, being a mover of things along with the teacher. She goes on, "There should be a corner or something private in the room for the kids to go to read books without being bothered. The teacher should be interested in the subject in which she or he is teaching. The teacher should not have a rigid schedule for classes, but should have a class whenever she or he and his or her pupils want. The teachers should be able to talk to the pupils easily and help them get interested and to ask lots of questions about the subject, although they should not be forced to answer and ask questions. There should be lots of breaks between lessons with discussions and activities, or just having a game of baseball or something to relax and loosen up everybody. There shouldn't be any silly rules like no chewing gum, no sharpening pencils, no talking to yourself, no wearing shorts or pants except on gym days. You must have your hair tied back if a girl, and no long hair on boys. These just make all the kids stiffen up and be afraid so that they will do something wrong, or else they just hate the teacher in school." You notice she keeps saying what she thinks the teacher should do. And I do think that a teacher can make a tremendous lot of difference. But don't be too quick to blame the teachers for everything that you don't like, or to think that they're preventing you from doing what you do like. Teachers, I've found, are on the whole wanting to do a good job. They want you to be happy in school, because if you're not, they're not. But the problem is that they're caught up in a certain kind of system, too. They're expected to behave in certain manners. They're expected to teach in a certain sort of way. Their principals and their supervisors expect them to, and the school boards expect the principals and the administrators to see that the teachers teach in that way. And guess who it is that is telling the school boards what to do? It's the parents and the other people, and those parents, many of them are going to say, "What? Noise? Talking? Fun in school? I didn't have any fun in school." They don't associate fun and pleasure with learning. And then they'll say, "What? No report cards with an A or a B or a C? How can I tell if my Mary is doing as well as Cynthia next door?" So you see, we need everybody to be thinking about the schools. Parents and teachers and administrators and you too, to ask the questions that Laura is asking. Why do we have to sit up in rows? Why can't we walk around? Perhaps that's a good place for you to begin your thinking. The school environment. Rosie wanting it out of doors. Laura wanting comfortable chairs. Last year, a Wisconsin boy wrote in a description of his classroom. He described the flaking paint, the ugly color, the windows so high up in the wall that they could not see outside, the floors that were dirty no matter how hard the janitor tried to keep them clean, the crowdedness of the room. And he finished up his paper, "Even the blue and green flowers on our teacher's desk can't make that room a cheerful place." I know for a fact that great learning is going on in that room because I've seen the writing that came in from that class, but I'll bet that that teacher herself longs for a better space in which to do the kind of teaching that she wants to do. And I think that if she had that better space, that class would do even better than they are doing. What sort of space would you like? Life magazine last year ran some pictures of a classroom where someone had designed little individual cubicles for every student, and they weren't just on the floor. They were piled up all the way to the ceiling. You might have to climb up to get into your individual cubicle. And the cubicles were big enough that you could invite in a friend, and the two of you could sit together and do your work. By piling them up to the ceiling, this left floor space for doing things as a group and for the sorts of learning that goes on the floor. There's a school in Philadelphia called the Parkway School that doesn't even have a school building. They have a few rooms where the kids get together and decide with the teachers what they're going to do, and then they fan out onto the parkway, to the museums, to the planetariums, to the libraries, and they carry on all their learning in the public institutions that have been provided for, why not children? Why just adults? Or children on special outings from school? Their school is all these public buildings. You can't really separate, though, the space in which you want to do your learning from what you'd like to do in it. So you also need to think, what do I want to know? What do I need to know? For instance, if you want to know about animals, you'd need to include a special kind of space for the animals. And if you want to learn about stars, ideally you'd want night and access to a telescope, as well as books and charts that tell you about stars. Speaking of night, whoever said that school should only be in the daytime? We not only think of school as four walls, but we think of it as 8:30 to 3:30. But the day has many moods, and it progresses from one sort of feeling to another. I remember in fourth grade, we petitioned our teacher to put arithmetic back in the morning because we felt that our arithmetic minds were sharper in the morning. And she laughed and put it back. I think everybody in the class signed the petition. There's a certain sort of learning that can go on in the evening better than in the daytime. Don't you feel more ready to sit, to listen, to tell stories, to read aloud? I've discovered that poetry is best in the evening when the lights are out. And Tolstoy, whom I mentioned before, had in his school a school day that included the evening. The students would come for a while during the day, and then they would come back again after supper and do the sorts of activities that are best in the evening. when you think also of what I want to know and what I need to know, an idea you might not have had before is that a subject for learning can also be, how do I learn? This is more important, or at least equally as important, as saying, I want to learn about history, or I want to learn about map making. Because if you study how to learn something, you are then able to learn anything. It's impossible at this stage in our history, and I guess it's always really been impossible, to know everything there is to know in the way of subject matter. There are so many facts that we are putting them all on great computers, and it is much more important to learn how to get a hold of those facts than to try to make of your mind a great computer that will hold all those facts. You can compare it to a supermarket. You can't eat all the food in a supermarket. In the same way, your mind can't absorb everything there is to know. But you can learn where everything is in a supermarket and how to get it. And then you can study cookbooks and nutrition and select out of the supermarket the things that you want, and also out of the little Italian import groceries and the health food stores, and you can combine them into what's right for you at the time. So think about how you learn best. I personally learn best if I'm interested. I learn best if I'm happy. If I'm joyful, I learn best of all. And one important thing for me is that I learn best if it's hard enough, if it's challenging. So when you're writing about your ideal school, think bold. Ask the whys. Say, why are tests given? How can tests be made better? Who makes the tests? Can I sometimes know more than the test maker? I've got a marvelous story about a first grader who brought home a paper of the sort where there's a picture and you draw, two pictures, and you draw the line to the correct picture. The line was, Mother is working. And the two pictures were, one was Mother sitting in an easy chair and reading a book. The other was Mother standing at the sink and doing the dishes. Wally drew a firm line from Mother is working to Mother sitting in an easy chair and reading the book. And his teacher had marked it wrong. Oh, and Wally didn't question it, because when you're in first grade, you assume that the teacher is right and that you're wrong. That's the way it is. Children are wrong, teachers are right. But when his mother looked at the paper and showed it to me, she said, of course Mother is working. I'm working on my PhD. And when I'm reading a book, I'm as cross and nasty as an old bear, and I'm not nice to the children, and I say, go away, Mother is working. And when I'm standing at the sink, that's when I'm relating to the kids, that's when I'm talking to them, that's when we're singing songs, when we're playing games. Of course Mother is working when she's sitting in a chair and reading a book. But the person that made that little test for first graders, he wasn't thinking big. He was limited by what he thought was work. Think about grades. How can we evaluate our work? Are the A's and the B's and the C's that we get on our report cards adequate? Do they really tell what we're learning? I suggest that you not only write down what you feel is your ideal school, that you discuss these ideas with your class. How does a person learn in the best way? Are there some ways of learning that are more effective than others? Are they more effective for everybody? Does everybody learn at the same rate? Is there anything wrong with going slower than your neighbor? Think of some time when you really learned something and look at those conditions. I know this is a big order, but think a while and talk a while, and then try writing down your ideas of the way you would like to see school.
The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. This is Ken Ost for the Wisconsin School of the Air.